Well, welcome. Thank you for being here. It's nice to have a full classroom, and it's late in the afternoon, so I'm going to try to keep this short and interactive. So that's my goal for the next hour that we have. And just to clarify, the topic that we'll have a conversation around is that this is mentoring through social media. Media is a very broad topic, and great, thank you. And I know media is a very broad topic, just like church tech is a very broad topic, and within an hour, just take a slice of it in terms of social media and online. Now, if you've got a smartphone or a tablet or a laptop, there's free Wi-Fi all over this campus. And you can download the slides and view along with me if you want to, djchuang.com. The slides are up as of an hour ago, and I just checked it. They're there, so you can download the notes if you want to look ahead to prepare your questions. I would love to have some questions and conversations. And this is my contact info also. And at the end of the course, you can also grab a business card to continue the conversation, which is my hope also for our time together. So let me open up with a word of prayer. We'll dive in and learn mentoring through media. Lord, thanks for this time together. I'm grateful for all the men and women here who are the present and the future of the Christian faith and the mentors that we're called to be. I pray that this hour would be a useful and a meaningful time for everyone here to realize the tools and the potential that we have in our generation to mentor. In Jesus' name, amen. So, quickly, my name's DJ Chuang, and I am a strategy consultant, which is a huge nebulous topic, and the world I swim in is church, technology, social media, internet, and theology. So technology and theology is kind of the world I swim in. I come alongside of churches and ministries to help them develop their future in different ways. And God shaped me uniquely. I went to seminary back in 1995 at Dallas Theological Seminary. So that's almost 20 years ago. And I married my dear wife on Sunday, right after I graduated on Saturday. And she happens to be sitting in the back in pink. Rochelle is her name. And actually, speaking of media, we had a long-distance relationship, and email was part of our relationship, so we married through email. But you know what? Since that time, I think the latest statistics I've read is 1 in 5 people in today's generation are meeting their spouse online. And so media and social media and the internet is becoming more and more a part of all our lives. So after seminary, I pastored for about 5 years. I've worked with churches and ministries through resourcing in various ways, strategy-wise, bring leaders together. I'm an instructor at the Talbot D-Min program for Asian American Ministry Track. Come on in, you'll have to sit on the floor, but you're welcome to sit in. And very, very honored and privileged to be invited to be part of this conversation. And for the next hour, I'll share a bit of my story, my perspective on mentoring, and the potential that we have to mentor with one another and into the future. Okay. So you've had a day to think about the topic of mentoring, and perhaps you have noticed some different definitions of mentoring. So by a show of hands, I'm curious, how many people here have had a good mentoring experience in your life? Okay, about a third to half. Okay, and then I'd also like to see how many of you have mentored someone else. Okay. Oh, decent. Okay. More than I would have thought. That's encouraging to hear. And I hope in the next hour you'll also see that you have opportunities to be a mentor as well as to have a mentor for yourself. So some of the words that have been tossed around already in Pastor Ben's presentation this morning and perhaps in some of your breakouts. Mentor, coaching, counseling, discipler, and teacher. All these are terms that have been tossed around. And I happened to have a conversation this week about, well, how do you define these different things and what does it really mean to be a mentor? Or a coach or a discipler? Because these terms are sometimes used synonymously. Sometimes people are very particular about what they mean. And when you don't have the right expectation with each other, both sides can get disappointed and sometimes even disillusioned. And in this spontaneous conversation, we found out how these words are defined is not so much a science, it's more of an art. And underneath it all, it comes down to culture. So depending on the culture that you're in, whether it's a traditional ethnic Asian context or a more multi-ethnic context or perhaps a business context. So mentoring is a big buzzword in the business world. It's not so much in the church world, but it's starting to come to take a voice of its own. So be sensitive to the culture and the people that you're interacting with when you're looking for a mentor or being a mentor to someone. All right, so I wanted to set that as a context just for us to understand what we mean by mentoring. Some of the most helpful quotes to me as I think about mentoring and the people that have been mentors to me and the people that I have opportunity to mentor are these. Seth Godin, he's a thought leader in the business world, marketing world, and he describes mentoring as something that's rarely about the facts of the deal, whatever it is that you're mentoring around, whether it's skills or character or life experience, but instead it is a transfer of emotion and confidence. And this is somewhat related to Pastor Kevin Wynn's comment about how mentoring is less about what you say to someone or what you learn from someone, but it's how the person made you feel as you were spending time together. And it's that emotional component in the information age of the 21st century that is so valuable and essential in mentoring, that you can't capture in books, you can't put it up on a web page or Wikipedia to look up at on your smartphone at your fingertip, but having that emotional and confidence building relationship in your life is so valuable. And in my work with church leaders and ministry leaders over the past 15 years or so, the number one need that Asian Americans have for their faith and for their ministry profession is finding a mentor. That they can't find one, or they don't have enough of this emotional and spiritual support for their work. And so what happens is you get burnout, you get disillusionment, and other things that happen as that frustration and that pain goes sideways. Second quote, mentoring is not a program or a curriculum, but it is a relationship. Again, I'm gonna harp on this word relationship and begin a segue into how that looks in real life. And then the mentor that helped me with this third quote is someone I met in Raleigh, North Carolina when I was a youth pastor, right, fresh out of seminary. And I had no Chinese church background experience, but this was a traditional Chinese church with Mandarin, Cantonese, and English. And this businessman took time to meet with me almost weekly, and we would just talk over lunch about life and ministry, because I was young and green and naive, but he had a lot more life experience, and he provided this concept of mentoring to me. The mentor brings resources. Okay, so that's life experience, that's access to networks, that's connections, relationships, and then the mentee brings the agenda. So when I think about mentoring, it's less about the mentor identifying someone that they want to mentor, but it's more about the mentee who is looking for something and going after the mentor to receive the mentoring. So that's more of my emphasis about mentoring. Now, a to give you some nuts and bolts as we dig into how mentoring looks like in the social media world. This is from a book titled The Last Art of Lingering, Mutual Mentoring for Life Transformation. And one of my colleagues at Leadership Network, where I do some work in facilitating church leaders and innovations, describes this as the best book on mentoring. And the main title is Lingering. One of the church leaders I've gotten to know over recent years is a worship pastor at Mariners Church, a very large church in Newport Beach here in Orange County. And he's got this sagely head of white hair, so he looks wise. And as a worship leader, he's a mentor to many worship leaders, and he describes mentoring as wasting time. Spending time with people talking about life and faith. And more is caught than taught. And so for those of you that are more organizational and planned, mentoring is going to be a tougher thing for you. But if you're someone that is more organic, in the now, more relational, mentoring will flow a lot more easily for you. But in that context, when you meet together in person, and I'm going to introduce you to some ways of meeting online, these are the 10 essential skills that a mentor needs to develop in that relationship. Praying and meeting, and these are dyads, meaning they're dynamics that go back and forth in pairs. Praying and meeting, listening and asking, affirming, admonishing, learning and reflecting, and multiplying and releasing. So it was fascinating to hear that one question during a panel discussion just an hour ago about, you know, when the mentoring relationship ends, how do you keep that going? And so if you incorporate that right at the beginning, that you realize mentoring is for a time and a season, and it will be part of that mentoring to help you multiply and mentor someone else. So the culture, the meaning of mentoring, you want to incorporate it right into what you're doing right from the start. And there's a little dance and a negotiation that you should have at the beginning, the mentor and the mentee, to kind of set some expectations and to see if there's a good chemistry. As ideal as I am, I wish I could mentor anybody that is a follower of Christ. But in reality, we all have our human limitations, and there's some people that we just have a hard time connecting with. And life being as busy as it is, and time being as little as becoming such a rare commodity, we don't need to make life harder than it needs to be. So if there's someone that doesn't quite connect with you for whatever reason, perhaps give it some more time and explore some other relationships and see what God opens up. Okay, so again, the relational aspect of developing a mentoring relationship is quite important, the chemistry aspect. Okay. And one more framework before I share a couple stories of mentors that have been real meaningful in my life. So this comes from Bobby Clinton's book, Connecting, the Mentoring Relationships You Need to Succeed in Life. So I don't know what you think of when you think of mentoring. Traditionally, we think of someone who's older and wiser, and they can download and impart all their blessing for us as an older to a younger, and they can impart wisdom and life experience to us. And that's certainly a valid and very valuable sense of mentoring that we can receive, and that's the experienced mentor. However, in life, especially in the 21st century, mentoring is multifaceted and multidimensional. So in this, what he describes as a constellation, you can also have mentors who are peers, internal, external, and also mentors who are emerging mentors, someone who's younger. And so in the new books that are coming out, they call this reverse mentoring. So someone younger can mentor you too, because none of us know everything, and so there's something we can learn from someone in the context of a mentoring relationship. Difference between internal and external. Anyone want to take a guess what that is referring to?
Relationship.
How many people here work on a staff of a church or ministry? Let me get a sense of that. Okay, about 10%. Okay, very good. And so for those that, of you that work within an organization, whether it's a church or a ministry or even a business context, your internal peer mentors would people be within the organization. Okay, within your immediate context where you're actually working together, and you'll have opportunity to kind of see each other at work so that when you have mentoring conversations, then you can actually debrief real life experience in real context. Whereas external mentors are the people you might meet up at a coffee house or a tea house and have those occasional conversations once a week or once a month to check in on life and give outside perspective, outside your organization. And by peer, we mean people that are kind of around the same age, same life stage in your life. They can help you with mentoring. Example of my emerging mentors. So I'm actually considerably older than many of you in this room. I'm 48 this summer. And it dawned on me, I'm like older. I'm the older generation now that I keep reading about. And I have a son who is 17 now. He's a senior in high school. And one of the things I realized, as much as I love technology, all the technology that we use today on iPhones and tablets and internet and social media and HD screens, all of that was post-college for me. So all of that is brand new, and I've had to learn it as it develops. And who knows what's going to come out next year, right? And so one of the things that I opened myself up to is reverse mentoring with my son. And since he was 8, I've been watching him in terms of how he uses technology, and he uses it rather differently than myself. And I opened myself up to learning from him. When we got him a laptop in middle school, the first thing that he does is open it up, goes to the internet, and goes to Google and downloads Google Chrome. Okay, he doesn't even want to touch and mess with Microsoft Internet Explorer. He goes right to Chrome, downloads it, and then he starts setting up bookmarks. I'm like, I didn't use bookmarks before at that time. I'd rather just type in the URLs. And then I noticed that he starts sorting it out into columns or folders, daily bookmarks and weekly bookmarks. I'm like, well, that's a neat idea. I hadn't thought of organizing it that way, because Apple gives you a Safari browser, and it's got the news and the popular websites and shopping websites, right? Mm-hmm. But here's a next generation emerging mentor, and I'm learning from this. I'm like, that's pretty good insight. I want to pass that along, learn that for myself, and pass it along to others. And then, and I don't know where he learned this, but he also made bookmarks that are just icons. Instead of using words, you can put bookmarks that are icons on the, what do they call it, the toolbar. Yeah, I'm like, wow, that's really smart use of space. And so over the years, I pick up some tech tips, but it also kind of gives me a little insight into how he's looking at the world, how he's processing life, and open yourself up to multiple kinds of mentoring and not put all your expectations on one person. Because I think as the world gets more complicated and we as human beings have limitation, we're moving towards specializing and also being interdependent with a larger network of people. I think that's partly what's happening. Okay. So that's my son. The mentor that has made perhaps the biggest difference in my life, and I've been blessed to have a number of mentors over the past 20 years in my life, different ones for different seasons, is this gentleman, Bugs Binion. And I had graduated from, so this is going back to 1988, I graduated from Virginia Tech with a computer engineering degree. And the picture on the left shows you how old my computer was. There's floppy disk drives. I don't know if you've seen those. floppy disk drives, CRT monitor with radiation coming through and whatever. And I started working as an engineer in Southern Maryland. So it was kind of where they had a lot of blue crab and oysters. But it's very rural, okay, and small town. But there was a Navy base there. And at that time, pre-internet, I started connecting with people online through what was called bulletin boards. And I would have to have an external box with this old computer called a modem. And that modem would have to go through a telephone line and make that screechy sound to connect with another computer. And through that bulletin board, I was exchanging a lot of files and software. But I was, this is what they call apps now. Okay, so back in the day, it was software. You could download and upload. But you could also have chats and message boards to have conversations with people. And part of me gravitated towards that. I was fresh out of college and just trying to make sense of life. And then I came across this guy's bulletin board. So Bugs Binion ran a bulletin board. He was a sailor, as sailors go, with a salty mouth and all that. But he came to Christ in his 40s. And it really changed his life and softened his heart and renewed him. And he ran this bulletin board called Southern Maryland Christian Information Service. And we chatted over the message board and then the chat room. And then I think over a month or two, he invited me over for dinner at his house. And we got to know each other and we felt a good chemistry. And then I started going over to his house more and more often. It became two or three times a week, and more like four or five times a week. I became like a fixture in the house. And he became a father figure to me. He discipled me. So not only was he a mentor to me, he discipled me through more of a program, curriculum. He became my counselor because he had some counseling background through his Navy training. And his biggest influence over those 2.5 years was as he got to hear my heartbeat and how God has shaped me, that he started praying for me, just bringing me before the Lord. And a year later, after he started praying, I felt a call to ministry. That the harvest is plentiful, the workers are few, therefore go into the harvest. And so that became my call to ministry. And Bugs shared with me that, and we have little in common in terms of culture and background. He's a retired Navy senior chief, but he was being faithful to reach people through his bulletin board. And when I shared with him, I feel a call to ministry, I sense a call, and he said he'd been praying for me for over a year, and that God would open the door to Dallas Theological Seminary. And that's the one school I applied to. I got in, and in January 1991, put all my worldly belongings in my car and drove down to Dallas from Maryland. And since that time, this is actually a picture of my graduation from seminary. So they came down and celebrated with me God's faithfulness and God's work over those years. And that all started because of a bulletin board through old modems running at 2,400 baud. So mentoring can happen online. And in our 21st century, how many of you have cell phones? Every hand should go up, right? So the power we have in this little device is more than what they had in the Apollo 13, more than what they had in the shuttle. I think that's correct. And so just the enormous power that we have, and we're barely scratching the surface in terms of using it, particularly as it comes to mentoring. Now, to ground us in Scripture, I want to point to you some of the verses or some of the questions. So the art of mentoring, the relationships I mentioned, the art of mentoring is the questions. Asking good questions that awaken the heart and soul to help you grow. So these are some sample questions from Jesus, and he's Well, he's God and man, and he's great, and the greatest question asker in history. And these are the kinds of mentoring questions that really opened up the heart and soul of his disciples. Okay? You have little faith. Why are you afraid? Why do you worry? Can you drink the cup that I'm going to drink? Who do you say that I am? Which of these three do you think was a good neighbor? What do you want me to do for you? These are very pointed, penetrating questions. And it, in a safe context of a relationship, it draws someone out to really search your heart and to grow. Do you want to get well? Jesus says to the man at the pool of Bethsaida. Okay, asking good questions. And this can be done through media. Right? It doesn't have to be just a face-to-face meeting. And here's the kicker. We've been mentored through media throughout human history. The Bible that we treasure and read and study and have given our lives to, for those of us that are followers of Christ, the Bible itself is a media. We are receiving spiritual truth that came from 2,000, 3,000 years ago as God moved, God's Spirit moved and inspired men and women to write down the words of truth, the words of life, and it was handwritten, and then it was printed, and now it's digital. And perhaps an analogy, if I may draw an analogy, you know, the scrolls that the scripture is written in are like ebooks that we have on our Kindles now, or in our iPads. The epistles, they're like emails and blog posts that we read very commonly today. Can you imagine, you know, 1,000 years from now, will people be reading our spiritual insights and what we're learning from the Lord in our blogs and emails and ebooks? You know, it's a very real reality. So spiritual truths have been conveyed over time and distance. And it's a reality in our spiritual life already. So how are we doing that in our Christian lives, in our leadership context? Okay, so some secular data to reinforce the opportunity we have for online mentoring. Kids today, this is from a CNN article a couple years ago, kids today are digital natives. Their comfort level of building relationships online is through the roof, and what we find is that technology is such a lever that the kids are not afraid to ask questions of their mentors. The questions they really want to know. Okay, so this article is in the context of teenagers who may come from single parent families, and they're looking for mentors online who are already developed in their careers. Okay, kind of a big brother, little brother concept. They can, in the safety of an online relationship, they can ask questions like, how much money do you make? We want to ask the money question, we don't have a safe place to do it. Right? So how much money do you make? How many hours do you have to sit there at a desk? What are some taboo subjects that you might be wrestling with? Hey, an online relationship perhaps can open up a safer context for you to ask those questions. Now, there's all kinds of people online, but you can find good ones too. Another research from Drexel University found that the result of online mentoring was largely positive, and that online mentoring can serve as an effective and viable option to the more traditional face-to-face model. So I want to open up our imagination to mentoring that can be far beyond the face-to-face. As valuable as the face-to-face is, it's not the only thing. And then another quote, this is from a ministry that Campus Crusade has in Canada. Online mentoring occurs when a mentor and mentee are connected in an area of felt need. Online mentors emphasize and communicate with remote visitors, and the mentor provides resources, shares hope, gives spiritual direction to the person they're ministering to. And the whole interaction takes place through email, which provides endless possibility for reaching people all over the world and on any schedule. So the opportunity is tremendous, and I'll share a few examples of how that works. So this visual shows you there's 10 levels of intimacy and communication. So while we do value, and there's no way to replace the face-to-face interaction, it doesn't have to be an all or nothing proposition. Okay, while I can share with you in this classroom, kind of face-to-face, but it's more of a group, the audio that's being recorded, you can pass along and share with someone else to help them understand, to expand their world, to help them imagine and dream bigger. And then through the wonders of technology, the internet and social media, you can do video chats, phone calls, voice over IP, text messaging, email, chat, comments on Facebook status, liking, Facebook status updates, Twitter, and all kinds of other social networks. Pinterest, any people on Pinterest? Yeah, see, all women. See, yeah. See, Pinterest is like 70% women. So it's very popular with women. Instagram. Yeah, Instagram. Google Plus. Oh, all right. Very progressive.
Good.
Yeah. Google Plus tends to attract secular people and photographers and techies. But I'm glad there's some Christian witness there. So thank you. And online mentoring, so just an example of some things that I've used to resource church leaders around the country. I'm an active blogger. I've been blogging since 1999, before it's called blogging. And God has used that to open doors for me to build new relationships, to actually get my job with Leadership Network back in 2006, when they were looking for someone who could blog, and I've been blogging for 7 years, and so that actually opened up a job for me. I got to meet a church planter in New York City named Drew Hyun. He's been reading my blog since he was in college back in Berkeley 10 years ago, and I just met him this summer when I was going through New York, and he thanked me for just sharing my perspective and helping him discover his calling along the way. And so that was a real affirmation and encouragement. So video chat, this picture actually illustrates, well, two of these guys are here at the conference, if you might have seen them. Daniel Ng, very helpful on the logistics of this conference. Ronnie Park, he's here with his wife Esther. Both of them are in the DMIN program. And this is a video chat that we put together on Zoom.us. It's a faster, leaner version of Skype, and it's all web-based. And we were having a video chat with Jason Chu, who's a rapper in the Pasadena area, just talking about, you know, how our faith as Asian Americans makes a difference. And so we did that through video chat. It was a mentoring moment, not quite a mentoring relationship per se, although I kind of had that with Ronnie and Daniel through the DMIN program that I'm a part of. But mentoring moments, treasure those when you have those, when teachable moments, mentoring moments, when they come up through social media. And you can be intentional with that. Google Docs, real handy cloud-based collaborative learning, social media, blogging, email, and phone. All of those are tools that you can readily use, and they're all free, right? So no cost, just time that you can invest in relationship people around the country, around the world. So you don't have to limit yourself to what you have in your immediate context. The world is your, what's the quote? The world's your oyster, something like that. Yeah. And then one more story, and I'll open up for your questions. So L Squared Foundation, I worked with them for 10 years. I mentioned earlier in Raleigh, I got to meet a businessman who spent a couple times a week with me, just talking over lunch and talking over evenings. His name is Paul Chu, and he's pictured here in the front row, Paul Chu and his wife, Alice. I was youth pastor to their three kids. And when God blessed them with some money, they set up a private family foundation dedicated to Asian American leadership. And this was the first event that we put together in 2001, bringing the pioneer Asian American leaders to Hotel Del Coronado in San Diego. We spent 3 days together to affirm them, to bless them, and to thank them for their step of faith to create ministries and churches that would serve and minister to the next generation. Because if we don't think about the future our faith is just one generation from extinction. And so through their investment, we've been able to multiply mentors. And part of that process and working with them was a mentoring experience for me. So we would have those heart-to-heart conversations, and I've had exposure to things that I have no business having exposure to. I didn't grow up in the church. I grew up in a small town of 20,000. My own backstory is just, I'm just an ordinary guy. But now God's given me opportunities to really serve churches around the country, and just really blessed through that. So the resources I continue to provide online, my personal website, djchuang.com. Again, for some of you that came in late, the slides that I've shared with you is already online at djchuang.com. You can download, and then the audios will be there within the hour. So I'll upload that too, if you'd like to share some of the thoughts with people you know. And then I also do a podcast on an almost weekly basis, having conversations with church leaders about social media. So churches that are using social media to reach people around the world through online worship with internet campuses, other creative things through social media. I capture all of that and then share it freely with people. Okay, so the opportunity is there, and my hope and encouragement to you is that you would build some mentor relationships in person and also online, because your light and your voice is needed. Your light and your voice is needed online. On the one hand, Asian Americans are the most active in terms of using internet and technology, but our Christian witness online is just sparse. And you in this room, you can change that through blogging, through email, whatever. Okay, so questions, comments, anything I can help you with? No question? Comment? Yes?
From your personal experience, what are some potential, perhaps some pitfalls or dangers that we could expect as, you know, if the church is beginning this process of using social media for their mentoring or communication?
Mm-hmm. Okay, what are some of the pitfalls and cautions? The challenge on social media is there's not really good classes that you can take that really speak to the church leader. And so not having that resource, going into the online world without knowledge is not real smart, because you need to know what you're getting into. And so at the socialmedia.church website, on the lower right, there's a list of books that can just help you understand the language and the culture of these online tools. Because these online tools, on the one hand, technology is neutral, but because people are not neutral, when we as people use technology, it creates moral situations, and it's no longer neutral. And so there's the bad stuff gets a lot of press and news, because news tends to be negative. But there's a lot of good things that can happen through the internet too. So on the lower right corner of this website, there's a list of books that can just help you understand a theology of technology. And there's a few handbooks that can help you understand the differences between Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and social, Instagram and Pinterest. So when I advise churches on how to use social media, I tend to say, pick one channel where most of your people are. So, and get adept at using one channel before you go to two or three. Instead of trying to be everywhere and doing it poorly, learn one, master it well, and then have some goals and strategy in mind. But that comes after practice, I think. You learn through practice, because there's no recipe for it. And it's very much like riding a bike. You need practice, and perhaps we can set up some video chats, and I'd be happy to provide some coaching, talk with your church leader. The other thing I would say is you need a person on point. So if everybody has access to the account, then no one's actually going to take care of the social media channel. So you have someone who is going to be consistent, being the voice for your church and ministry on that social media channel. So those are kind of the guiding principles, I would say. And I think in an Asian American context, having a honest conversation about what to do when people talk back. See, the power of social media is that it gives everyone a voice. Very egalitarian, very anti-hierarchical. And so you need to have that conversation up front about what happens when someone says something negative or something that could be perceived negative. That will happen. It's not a when, it's a if. Or it's not a if, it's a when. And so you want to just think through how you want to handle that. Yes?
Can you continue on with that? Because one of the things I find is that when you're using social media, there are a lot of people that would chime in.
Yes.
And there are a lot of people that would chime in in an eyebrow kind of raising kind of way. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to answer a fool according to his folly. And so my default is just not say anything at all, not to respond at all. Mm-hmm. And so what is a wise way to respond to negativity or, mm-hmm. for lack of a better term, stupidity?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's a term for that in the internet world. They call them trolls or flaming. So there are people that just want to pick a fight. Uh-huh. And when you have this technology and this power to put your voice out there instantly, globally, and permanently on the internet, there's people that are going to misuse that power. And depending on the context, depending on the social network you're on, sometimes you have the administrative opportunity to moderate. So specific example, let's say you have a blog and you have open comments. Instead of letting every comment through instantly, you can moderate them so that you approve the ones that are helpful and meaningful conversations, and then you delete the ones that are not useful. Now, if it's an open platform, let's say Twitter, where people can link to your username and talk at you. Here's the thing that I think church leaders have a hard time understanding. There's a certain culture in the internet that if you don't use your voice, essentially you've defaulted and given the microphone over to the trolls. So by staying silent, you're not doing anybody a favor. You're actually letting go of the opportunity that you have to respond. And you're letting other people tell your story instead of you telling your own story. And so rather than just holding back and being silent, which is kind of in the past before internet, you could do that because you don't want to answer fool like you said. But I think in the internet age, you have to engage civilly and responsively to comments that may be out there, because when someone Googles your church name or your personal name and all they see is negative comment, that doesn't reflect well on your reputation if you don't also tell your own story. Okay. And then a second advice that I've found helpful is when the trolls come, that's an opportunity to engage in a conversation. So invite them out for a face-to-face meeting, because one of the things that the online world does not convey well, words alone do not convey tone of voice, mm-hmm. and words alone do not convey body language. And when it comes to emotionally charged issues, that's 90% plus of the communication, the emotional and the nonverbals. And so to get a video chat or a personal meeting and take that opportunity to not even confront, but just to engage that is probably a strong move that can diffuse the incident. So those are the two best ideas that I've come across. And this is a thing that continually evolves, and you want to prepare your people that trolls are a reality of our world. Security is becoming an increasing issue, as is privacy. So security and privacy are becoming big issues. I've experienced two or three times when my credit card number has been misused, but to this day, as much as I use the internet, I haven't had identity theft. Okay, but that's a very real reality for people, whether you're online or not. Okay, I know people that have had identity theft, not because they're online, but just because they're alive and they have a credit card. So that's the world we live in, so we have to learn.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, a couple more questions, and then I'll release you. Take an extended break. Yes.
So the reverse of answering the trolls, how should you, I mean, I see it on Facebook. People use their Facebook platform to say great things. I see people on Facebook using their platform to say dumb things. How should you, should you constantly put up good things? Should you constantly put up funny things? How do you mix up yours, or what is a good way of using your social media?
What is a good way of using your social media? One of the things they say in social media strategy, and the people that write the books and people that are doing social media well, is the idea of developing your voice. Mm-hmm. So each of us have a particular way that we communicate most effectively that engages other people and encourages them and influences them. Okay, so one of the pictures that I use is, if you write well, blogging is a great channel for you to express yourself and share your ideas and use your voice. If you talk well, better than you write, then perhaps podcasting is a better channel for you to express your voice. But if you like talking with your hands, then YouTube and videos might be a good way for you to express your voice. So lean into your strength. Communication doesn't need to be harder than it needs to be, and practice to find your voice. You have a lot of freedom to experiment, because these things are freely available. So as you try some different things and something gets more response to the people you're trying to communicate to, then do more of that. So it's a learning process as you go. Sometimes I'll sit down with someone and just take a look at their web presence and their social media presence and give them some feedback and kind of discern what their goals might be and what they want to do with the social media. For me, I like to throw a lot of ideas out there. And over the years, there's been recurring themes, which is innovation, Asian American and multi-ethnic churches. So it's over the years that my voice has developed, but it took years to do that for me. Do you have a question about a specific channel? We could drill deeper into that.
You brought up good ideas there that I didn't think about. And, didn't think about podcasting or using YouTube. I just... words, and that was it.
Words is and images. Images are actually a big way of communicating for people. Photography is the number one hobby around the world, and all of us have a camera in our pockets now. So there are some very active people on Instagram and Vine, where they express themselves visually, and are able to connect with the audience that way. Okay, one more question, we'll wrap it up. Let's go. Yes?
So earlier you made the comment that although there are a lot of Asian American users of social media, that there probably isn't as much of like an establishment of like the Asian American Christian voice online as you would maybe like to see.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in what specific ways, like, when you think like there's a lack, what areas do you see a lack of, or that you would want to see more of the voices, that's kind of more of like a general a general perception?
It's a general perception, and I would say it's specific to almost everything. So there's not a media channel where we can learn from other churches and identify the issues. There's not a school that you can go to understand the complexity and the nuances of navigating Asian cultures and Asian American cultures. Because ministry is not generic. Ministry is actually very contextual. And what we learn through seminary and basic theological training and Christian books, the majority of it is written from a Eurocentric Anglo-American context. And so when we try to apply the things that we learn there, and it doesn't work, and it creates a bit of frustration. And even this conference, this conference is such a unique pioneering effort. There's no Asian American conference that meets on an annual basis for people to keep sharp and learn from one another. So what's happening here, and I commend Pastor Ben for taking that step of faith, and I commend Biola for really investing in this, that hey, they really see this as not just a need, but they're willing to invest in it. And as far as online social media presence, there's not a place where you can ask your questions. You shouldn't have to wait a whole year for a breakout like this to ask your questions. You should be able to have places that you can go to ask questions, because here's a challenge of ministry, for those of you that are in churches, and whether it's pastoral ministry or parachurch ministry, or church staff, or even church volunteer. In your immediate context, you're not going to have people you can ask your questions. The challenge of leadership is rather isolating. And what's so wonderful about an environment like a seminary, a Bible college, you're around with people that are like-minded, after the same thing, want to please God and serve God. But when you actually go out into the real world, you're it. And for many of us, depending on role, you have to come up with answers by yourself. But the internet allows us to connect with others who are in similar contexts, where we can build relationships and learn and recognize that we're not alone. And it's my hope that we will break that paralysis and that isolation, and really speak into each other's lives as external peer mentors through social media. Okay, great. Well, thank you for your kind attention. Really appreciate you being here. If you'd like to stay in touch and continue the conversation, my business cards are up here. Please take that. And again, my slides are online at djchuan.com. Thank you.